The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Live from MMA Fighting Studios, this is Between the Links. And now, your host, Mike Peck.
The iconic voice of Esther Lynn welcomes you to a brand new edition of Between the Links. Thank you for joining us once again on this Thursday. We're in the middle of a crazy stretch of time in the combat sports world. We had a big event last night that we're going to discuss. Bellator returned for the first time in 2021 this past Friday. We'll discuss that. They got another event coming up tomorrow. UFC is back on ABC Saturday afternoon. We will talk about that as well. And we have ourselves a good old-fashioned rematch. Why? Because the honorable judge Casey Lydon tells me, hey, you know what? I think now that these days have gone by, I think Jed might have beaten Jose last week. I can't eat. I can't sleep. Did I make the wrong decision? So because we all care, we decided let's run it back. Let's help Casey get a good night's sleep tonight. So we introduced the challenger once again, a chance to get one back and extend his lead in the career standings. Let us say hello to MMA Fighting Zone, Mr. Jed Meshew. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing really well. Let's not say get one back. I think we all know I'm actually 3-0 versus Jose. If you want to just change that record to just show my dominant record over Jose, that'd be optimal. So I'm happy to come correct the wrong, because really I've lost to one man on this show, just one, and it's Casey. And so I'm glad that Casey recognizes his failing and is going to make good.
And we introduce the reigning defending BTL champion. He does not want to leave any doubts this week. He also joins us from MMAfighting.com, the host of the A-Side live chat, the champ himself, Jose Youngs. How are you, my man? No way.
He couldn't even show his face. He's too shook to get this work.
This isn't like Skype where I could see everything as it happens. It doesn't work that way. So like every time we, hey, there he is, the champ, back on the program. How are you, my friend?
I heard venerable Casey Lydon thinks Jed Meshew might have won, and then my entire computer shut down. So that tells you exactly what you need to know.
Well, welcome back. Is this the sick shirt, right? This is the sick shirt that got everybody talking. Was that the
what
one?
What do you mean the sick shirt? Look in my closet and be like, oh, that's a lot of sick shirts. This just happens to be one that was made apparent on national broadcast. So yes, this is a sick shirt, but not the sick shirt.
Incorrect. This is the sick shirt, sir. Fight circuit, baby. Tomorrow night. Let's go.
See, so much going on in the combat sports world, but let's talk about one piece of business. Let's talk about the 2021 debut for Bellator MMA, more specifically how that event ended on Friday night, this past Friday night, that is, and what that is going to lead to. So Patricio Pitbull submits Emmanuel Sanchez in the first round. He retains his featherweight title, did so impressively. One does not just do that to a fighter like Emmanuel Sanchez. I think a lot of people expected Patricio Pitbull to win that emphatically in that kind of a way. I don't know if people really expected that, but what an incredible way to cap off Bellator 255 in beautiful Uncasville, Connecticut. Jose, we begin with you. Just your reaction to what Patricio Pitbull did six nights ago.
Easy day in the park for the greatest Bellator fighter of all time. Showed up, did exactly what everyone thought he was going to do. And I feel like this Grand Prix, the only fighter that really had anything for him, is AJ McKee. And they, of course, meet in the middle. They're the two best fighters in this. They were the two best fighters entering this tournament. And now they're the two best and the final two standing. So did it to Pedro Carvalho. Pieced up Juan Archuleta. TKO'd Michael Chandler, who's about to fight for a UFC championship. And everyone, you know, they rolled out the red carpet for him. So to people that are surprised that Patricio Pitbull basically didn't break a sweat against Emmanuel Sanchez, I say, why? This is exactly what he's done. Maybe you just haven't watched Bellator ever and you're expecting these the semifinals of a Grand Prix to be some sort of competitive. But that just shows you how good Patricio Pitbull is, arguably the best featherweight in the world. I'm not going to make that argument right now because we're never going to get these fights. So it's illogical to even put that out there. But yes, not surprised whatsoever for the greatest fighter in Bellator history to, less than 4 minutes put away someone in the semifinal. So let's move on.
Jed, you kind of expected this to go pretty dominantly for Patricio Pitbull. I expected him to win. I didn't expect him to put him absolutely to sleep in the first 3 minutes of the fight. But here we are. Your thoughts on Patricio's performance on Friday night?
How do you think anything other than it was sensational? Like, right? Like, look, I thought he was going to win. I thought he was going to win dominantly. But, I mean, these guys have fought before. Sanchez made it to the cards. And he just got to quote Demetrius Johnson, who's used this phrase like 17 times this past week. He got the bricks blown off him. Like, that was – Pitbull just ran through him. So it's awesome. It sets up the fight. Everybody wanted – so my one quibble with this whole thing, because obviously this Grand Prix is great. I love Grand Prix. Let's do them all the time. Really pumped for Bellator's light heavyweight one that's about to kick off here in just a hot minute. The one problem is that we did ultimately get the end point that everybody kind of just wanted. So it does sort of beg the question how necessary these other fights were, because we really just wanted to see AJ McKee versus Patricio Pitbull, and it took us like a year and a half to get the fight that we all kind of wanted. That being said, the way we did get there, Pitbull, two finishes out of his three fights, I believe, because Juan Archuleta hit the cards with him, but Juan Archuleta is also really, really freaking good. And McKee just, again, blew the bricks off everybody he faced. So there's even more hype for this fight. Like, that is maybe my most anticipated fight of, I assume that happens this year. So of the year, like, there's not going to be a lot more fights that I'm more interested in than that one.
All right. I'm glad you said that, Jed, because we got Pitbull versus McKee. It's the fight everybody wanted to see when this whole thing started. And, you know, like you said, it took a while to get here, mostly because we had a freaking pandemic that shut everything down. But we're here. So let me ask you, Jed, because you kind of mentioned it. We know this is a big fight. This is probably the biggest fight Bellator can make right now. But when you think of, like, all the big fights Bellator has had over the years, the builds to these fights, where do you rank this one overall in terms of, like, how big this fight actually is? Like, the stakes, the anticipation, et cetera. Like, are you willing to say this is a top five biggest fight Bellator can make in, like, company history? Like, is that a crazy question to ask right now?
No, I think that's totally fair. Biggest is obviously a subjective term, and my one sort of caveat to doing any of this, like, I think from a competitive standpoint, this is maybe the best fight they've ever put together, and they've got a couple of really good ones there, especially some kind of champion versus champion style fights that they've done. Diego Lima, Gegard Mousasi, like, that's a really high level skill fight. I mean, Pitbull Chandler, really high level fight there. But I mean, I think this is, as far as, like, in weight, like, inter weight class, this is amongst the best fights they've ever had in that regard. I am not entirely sure how big it is from a promotional standpoint. Obviously, this is the culmination of the Grand Prix. This is their greatest fighter ever against the hot prospect in the sport. I think there's a lot to get behind here, but I'm not entirely sure how much the general public is pumped for this fight. Neither guy really has a huge following in that regard. So, you know, if you want to go biggest, it probably pales behind. I mean, certainly some of the other kind of marquee names that they've had come through the doors of Bellator. But as far as the combination of high-level mixed martial arts, names that matter, kind of what this means as far as, and frankly, the winner of this could potentially be the best featherweight in the world. Like Jose said, loath to give him credit, but he is right in this regard, at least. We're never going to actually know the answer to that, but I think the all those factors together, that makes this, to me, definitely one of their top five fights in promotional history.
Agree or disagree, Jose? Is this a top five fight ever in Bellator? Like, again, and I know who I'm speaking with right now, and I know, especially in this day and age, the fight isn't a fight until both guys enter the cage and the ring announcer does the ring announcing and, you know, we get a bell, okay? I understand all of that, but in terms of, let's just say everything's rosy, we get to the fight, all of those things happen. Is this a top five fight in Bellator history?
In terms of competitive and competitiveness, 100%. I'd probably put it right up there with, like, the Michael Chandler, Eddie Alvarez rematch, even the trilogy that was supposed to happened but never obviously fell apart. Pitbull Chandler kind of felt like a fight for the greatest Bellator fighter of all time, considering they were, that was a champ fight. And then, but in terms of like the casual fans looking in, I hate to agree with my opponent, but it's not quite there yet. When you have fights like Kimbo Slice, Ken Shamrock, Kimbo Slice, Dada 5000, Hoist Gracie, Ken
Best
Shamrock,
fight ever.
Like any Fedor fight. So probably not going to get the eyeballs that those fight happens, and I'm not going to put it next. Well, I didn't put Dada 5000 versus Kimbo Slice on the greatest competitive fights of all time because that kind of transcends the sport of mixed martial arts, and you kind of have to just look at that as an outlier rather than a fight because that was more of a once-in-a-lifetime moment. So, yes, competitively, yes, 100%. Competitively, easily top five, maybe top two. This is just a culmination of a perfect storm, but in terms of the casual fans tuning in, I don't think it's going to reach the masses, unfortunately.
What can Bellator do? Like, me and AK on to the next one, we basically said, like, they need to, like, do that, put that stare down on all these cards moving forward for, like, the next several weeks. Like, just pump it, and then by the time we get to May 7th, which is, like, the best card of all of them, because we got the Bantamweight title fight, we got, you know, Apache Mix versus James Gallagher. We got Yoel Romero versus Anthony Rumble Johnson. They just added Valerie Lareda, who's becoming a star for them, to that card. Like, that's on that card, I believe, like, they should have the date ready to go for Pitbull McKee and start building that fight now. So if you're Bellator, Jose, how do we get people bought into this thing? Like, get them on board. Like, this is such a good fight. What can they do to get that audience to get on board as much as, like, you, me, the hardcore fans, et cetera?
They need to get on bigger broadcast. They need to get on ESPNs. They need to get on, like, before, like, we, like, one championship we just saw, they have all their fighters showing up on NBA on TNT. Like, you see Demetrius Johnson, Eddie Alvarez, like, rolling with Shaq and Charles Barkley. So people that only watch the NBA are now going to see these things. We're seeing the same thing with the AEW wrestling, where they're showing up on these big major networks with these big major superstars. Bellator needs to do that. They also need to just buy all of the ad space possible for all these upcoming boxing matches. Like, imagine seeing AJ McKee and Patricio Pitbull in commercials leading up to the Canelo Billy Joe Saunders fight. That's what they got to do. They just have to go balls out and put all of the marketing behind it. Help buy one. Like, I remember when I went to a UFC fan expo, World Series of Fighting bought a truck with, I think it was like Jake Shields and Usmal Parharis on it was one of those trucks. It was just a billboard truck, and they literally just drove in a circle around the UFC fan apex. Do that. Park one outside the UFC apex. I mean, Chris Cyborg did that when Amanda Nunes fought. Do everything possible. Help buy a tank, DX style, and roll into the UFC apex and just park it in front of it. Just do whatever you want, do whatever you can to steal some of these eyeballs, because, like, we all, and also put all of the fighters, sign Alistair Overeem and Junior Santos and have them rematch in the co-main event. I don't care. Fill this card up and make it a priority. Don't make this a one fight card like Bellator has been known to do. Load it up, put as many possible fights that aren't in Grand Prix or title fights, and stick it on this card and get as many eyes as possible watching AJ McKee, Patricio Pitbull, and then put them out there, run them through the car wash at ESPN, get the tank, get the truck, put them on everything, just go do whatever you can. Hell, buy ad space for Fight Circus 3, maybe Jed will wear that t-shirt too, and then we can move forward from there.
I was going to say, Jed, and like, for the phone booth fight, you just put like a picture of Pitbull on one piece of the phone booth and you put a picture of AJ McKee on the other piece of the phone booth. Like, how would you do this? Like, what does Bellator need to do to like get just milk everything out of this fight?
I think Jose touched on something at the end there, which is they need to get me involved because I will be an irrational cheerleader for bad MMA. So maybe they could get me to be an irrational cheerleader for good MMA. More seriously, they need to promote. And it's really infuriating to me in a lot of ways that we have to discuss like promotion as if it's a novelty and not the core responsibility of these organizations, because the UFC has never really done a great job of promoting anybody except for themselves. And Bellator seemingly kind of has a similar vibe in a lot of ways. Like, I think a lot of things previously mentioned are good. You can't go all in on this just because even if you do, I actually like if you go all the way in and leverage every single piece of anything you have for this fight, one, that creates the opportunity for like a Kimbo Seth Petruzzelli just cataclysmically awful thing to happen. No contest ruins the taste for everybody. Two, at that point, you really are kind of hoping AJ McKee wins because Pitbull is a little older. Pitbull maybe closing in on that period of the time where he decides he wants to leave the organization, try his hand in the UFC before his career kind of starts to turn. So you're really hoping AJ McKee wins that, and that's a bit of a gamble. But every card you have, this needs to be front and center. You need to be talking about it. You need to have that stare down, like you mentioned. I think you do need to branch out with your promotion and just build it. Like, promotion requires you to get people interested in a myriad of ways, and they need to do that. I'm not as sold on the idea that they should get in front of like all these boxing cards. I think some of that will help. I think absolutely doing the media push, making, you know, ESPN cover this more just to get as many casual eyeballs in front of something as possible, that's going to help. I think you do have to pair it. You don't necessarily need to really backload a card with major, like all the stars, but you need to pair it with the biggest star you can proffer. Like, obviously, Kimbo RIP, like, he would have been the optimal person to put on a card like this. But without him, maybe you can get Fedor. I'm not sure that that's doable, that that's where you want to go. Chris Cyborg might be like the excellent kind of middle ground there of somebody who's going to draw eyeballs for ancillary reasons to get them on this. And then be creative, like pay UFC fighters to talk about Bellator in their interviews. You can't put a Bellator logo on them because we're going to talk about shitty Venom in like a hot minute here, but you could be like, hey, John Jones, what have you just tweeted about Bellator a lot? You want to tweet? You really like to tweet, and most of it's trash. What if in the middle of you doing these bad tweets, you also were just like, man, I'm really pumped about the Featherweight Grand Prix? Like, get creative with it. Get more people interested, because this is what you do it for. In the end, if AJ McKee wins, he is a bankable star, and if Pitbull wins, he's your best fighter ever. You want to have as much behind him as you can get in a lot of respects.
Last thing on this, we've already had discussions on this show, and it was mentioned a couple of times by both of you guys about like where these guys would rank in the world at 145, you know, depending on who wins. But, you know, we got this fight coming up. On the other side, the UFC has a featherweight title that's going to be coming up. Alexander Volkanovski versus Brian Ortega, who, you know, after Volkanovski caught COVID, he's been recovering from that. His story is just unbelievable. But he and Ortega are now going to host, yes, the return of the Ultimate Fighter, and that's going to build up their title fight later on the air. And normally it's the UFC, and then there's like everybody else in terms of interest in most people's eyes with this sport. And when Bellator or PFL or ONE or Triller or even Fight Circus can take some of that shine, it's a pretty big deal. So, Jose, has Bellator done that at 145? Like, is this title fight in your eyes more interesting than Volkanovski versus Ortega?
More interesting? I'm not more interested, but I'm also like, they're right on par with each other in my mind. And I know everyone's gonna say, like, that's a cop out, this and that. I can convince myself either way that I'm more interested at the time, because I think honestly, two wins over Max Holloway is more impressive than a win over AJ McKee in my mind. especially for Pitbull, and those seem to be the two that a lot of people like, the three, Holloway, Volkanovski, and Pitbull, like who's the best featherweight in the world. And I just think, as much as I think Patricio Pitbull is fantastic, he's sitting right behind Volkanovski and Holloway, because Holloway's performance against Cater just gave more shine to how good Alexander Volkanovski is, that he not only survived Max Holloway's output, but beat him twice. And yes, we can argue that he lost the second fight and maybe even the first fight, but an L is an L. So I don't know. I don't really care one way or another which one's more interesting to me, because both of them have storylines for different reasons. AJ McKee's undefeated. Brian Ortega pieced up the Korean Zombie in a fight that I thought Korean Zombie would absolutely dominate on the feet. Volkanovski, obviously 2-0 against Holloway. Patricio Pitbull, the greatest fighter in Bellator history, and has knocked out everyone, including Michael Chandler. And I can convince myself either way. So they're right neck and neck with me. And at this moment in time, I can't decide.
Jed, what about you? You've made your presence felt about how you feel about Brian Ortega, and you know you're not quite convinced. Him and Stipe are just two of those guys for you. But I mean, like, when you look at these fights, like, which one interests you more? Is it Volkanovski versus Ortega, or is it Pitbull versus McKee?
It's definitely Volkanovski Ortega. Like, look, don't get me wrong. Pitbull McKee, one of my most anticipated fights this year. For all the a lot of other reasons, and the N-Cage product will be fascinating. If the winner of that is not going to be the best featherweight in the world, like, I mean, we can argue that maybe they could be, and that is technically true. Like, we don't know, and we can't say for a fact that the winner of that won't be. But Alexander Volkanovski, this is about to hurt me really hard to say, because I'm about as big a Jose Aldo mark as you can find. I think Volkanovski has a very good chance to be the greatest featherweight of all time. And I do not say that lightly, because Jose Aldo is clearly the best featherweight of all time. John Anik, you're friggin' insane, and I wish you'd quit saying it was Max Holloway. It's clearly Jose Aldo. And Volkanovski has all the tools to get there. And Ortega is – look, I don't like Brian Ortega. Not personally. He actually seems like a great dude. But I don't understand him as a fighter, and so I hate him because I cannot figure him out. And because I can't figure him out, and also maybe just because of what I can understand about him, I think he's the most interesting test for Volkanovski. Holloway in the rematch was super impressive, the way he adjusted that and came with a new game plan and provided more looks and a more difficult test for Volkanovski. That was awesome. If they had a trilogy fight, I have no doubt that Volkanovski wins it again, because Volkanovski is one of, if not the best in this sport at making in-fight mid-round adjustments, at seeing what his opponents are doing and adjusting to it in a tangible and effective way. And that's what we saw in the rematch. Holloway came out with a whole new strategy. His stance was different. Everything he was doing was different. It took Volkanovski about two rounds to really key in on that. And then as the fight built on, Volkanovski won. I've made this analogy several times. Volkanovski he's like the casino. Like, if you just play the numbers with him, you are going to lose over an extended period of time. So, like, maybe you can outpoint him over five rounds. It's going to be hellaciously difficult to do that. The way anyone's ever going to beat him, because of how talented he is, his skills, his adjustments, like, you're just going to need to have one big piece of offense. And as much as I don't understand Brian Ortega, that is what he does best. He has one dynamic piece of offense. He loses a shitload of fights and then wins them in dramatic, violent fashion. That's what you need against a guy like Volkanovski, and that dynamic is the most interesting possible to me, because if anyone's going to kick over that apple cart, I kind of think it's Ortega. And if he does, then I'm going to hate everything. But that's really fascinating. I can't deny that, like, I'm really, really interested to see that happen.
Of course, Bellator back again tomorrow, Bellator 256. That one's headlined by the start of the light heavyweight Grand Prix between Ryan Bader and Lyoto Machida. I thought Bellator 255 was fun. The Ode to Strikeforce that opened to the main card was tremendous. I thought all in all it was a really good night for Bellator. But we'll move ahead to how ONE Championship's first event on TNT played out last night. But the point for round one goes to... the the ringmaster of the fight circus himself, Jed Meshew, on the board, 1-0. A fun opening round, but
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with a bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
We go from fun to, depending on who you speak with, not so fun. Last night, one on TNT1, the main card kicks off with former UFC lightweight champion, a multi-time champion, almost every organization he's fought for, Eddie Alvarez takes on Yuri Lapikus. Alvarez lands a takedown. He's throwing a barrage of punches and strikes. Lapikus grabs the back of his head. He goes down to the mat. Referee Justin Brown calls a stop to the action, pulls the red card, and Eddie Alvarez is disqualified. What an unfortunate start to the one on TNT era. But Jed Meshew, your reaction to the DQ, how this all played out. I mean, we've seen so many crazy endings already in 2021. How did you react to this crazy ending?
Yeah, that was unfortunate for one. Real quick, shout out to one who put all their promotional heft behind Demetrius Johnson and Eddie Alvarez, and then Eddie gets himself DQ'd and DJ gets bolted. Just what a the MMA gods are fickle as hell, and it's funny as shit. Like, every time somebody's really trying to take a swing, they just slip on the world's biggest banana peel, and that was awesome. As far as the DQ goes, I have no idea if that was legit or not. To be clear, I'm sure that Lapikus was hurt. I do not know that those punches were to the back of the head. Many of them did not look like that. Maybe a couple were. How actually efficacious those were, like how much those affected him, are questionable to me just because of the manner they were thrown. Their arm punches didn't really look like he hit a lot there. So I'm just not really sure. I didn't like it. I think, you know, my stance has always been, if you do something and it's illegal, you should lose the fight if the guy can't continue. So on that ground, sure. I question, this is not a Piotr Jan, Aljamain Sterling clear-cut illegality. I have serious questions about how illegal those strikes were, but end of the day, the ref is the arbiter. He pulled the red card, said they were illegal, so the DQ is fine. Just really unfortunate and not anybody's idea of good.
Jose, your thoughts? And on top of that, just hearing Chatry say, you know what? I've watched the fight upon further review. Yeah, Eddie landed some illegal shots. Like, what did you think of this whole situation?
My God, it was just absolute tomfoolery and skullduggery all around. Like, it's unfortunate because, like, Chatry, we've all seen the interviews where he like he promotes his style of promoting was like we are legitimate martial arts and we promote like respect and honor and this and that, and then the first fight on TNT is a disqualification for a fighter breaking the rules, like just steer into the crash right there. And then Eddie Alvarez's promotion
was saying they get a billion views. Is that not right?
Well, there's lying in the promotion. And then Eddie Alvarez's headset didn't work. I don't know if you guys saw that, but his headset didn't even work, so they're trying to ask him questions. And he's just standing there, like, with his arms folded, looking like he didn't want to be there. So their big fighter that was just rolling around with Shaq on NBA on TNT and getting this big rub gets himself disqualified. All the fighters say it's ridiculous, and it's a ridiculous disqualification. And then they have audio issues right out of the gate. Like, it is just unfortunate. Absolutely all around. Eddie Alvarez is what, like, oh, what is he, like, one and two in one championship? And one of them, he gets like destroyed in the first fight, and then he gets himself disqualified in his third fight. So Eddie Alvarez is just snake bitten at this point, fighting for one championship. It's unfortunate, it's ridiculous, and the fact that it's happening so close to the Petr Yan Aljamain Sterling disqualification, and Aljamain Sterling is now congratulating Yuri, saying, like, congratulations, you've graduated from Aljamain Sterling's acting classes, and this and that. It's just like a perfect storm of crap that's all happening in the MMA world right now, and I really hope that the payoff is nothing bad happens at UFC 261, because that would be real unfortunate if one of those fights got disqualified too. But I feel bad for Eddie. Feel bad for Yuri. Sucks that happened to one championship, but them's the breaks, kids. You break a rule, you get disqualified. I would have preferred maybe a yellow card if they're going to do this whole card system thing. A lot of fighters were saying, like, how come you didn't get warns and this and that. I get it. Just sucks all around.
Did you see JDS's tweet? Because that's my favorite one.
What did it say? I didn't see it.
Oh, some dude was like, he got punched in the back of the head. He's like, yeah, imagine getting elbowed in the back of the head. It's terrible. It's like, dude, you are really hanging on to, I lost to Ciryl Gane because I got elbowed in the back of the head, not because I got obliterated right before that. Okay. Keep beating that dead horse. A lot of fun fighter takes from last night.
Yes, I did see some of them. I did miss the JDS one, but I will say I spoke very briefly to Justin Brown, the referee, this morning. He's not able to comment about anything that happened last night. He would be cool with it, but he hasn't really like cleared it with one. So we don't know what he was thinking, and he's not even willing to tell me about it off the record, which is fine. But so all this is happening. We're trying to digest it all. And by the way, one thing I will say about one, the pacing of the card last night was outstanding. So continue to do that, and we'll all be very happy, even though there's only three fights on it. But after all this happens, we get to the flyweight title fight between Adriana Moraes and Demetrius Johnson, the former UFC flyweight king. And despite being around a 5-1 dog, Moraes knocks DJ out with a brutal knee in the second round, a legal knee to a grounded opponent. And after DJ's interview with us ahead of the fight, talking about the Yan versus Aljo ending and how much he likes strikes to the knees to grounded opponents, so they should change the rules. That was just wild to see. But Jose, Moraes was a really sneaky pick amongst the MMA betting community last night, and he comes through in a big way for them. What did you make of his performance, and what stood out to you in the fight outside of him just kneeing DJ unconscious?
What stood out to me was the fact that he was like 7-8 inches taller than Demetrius Johnson. Like, and then they showed the video of them hugging in the back. Don't tell me they're the same weight class. Like Adriano's clearly cut down to 135, and Demetrius Johnson's just get like standing up from playing Dark Souls, walking into the cage and fighting his big brother. Like, that's what happened. Demetrius Johnson, it just shows that you can be the greatest fighter of all time in your weight class, arguably the greatest fighter in the history of the sport, but you add a new set of rules that you haven't fought with for most of your career, and then on top of that, you have a guy that's like 7 inches taller than you, who's heavier than you, has an elite level black belt, elite level grappling, and you can get blasted in the face when your butt's on the ground. Like, it just shows that one championship is a completely different ball game for MMA. And I think a lot of people that watch the Petr Yan Aljo fight and then they come and then they tune into one championship, like, oh, I like MMA, I'll watch one on TNT, it's on national television, and then they see that and they're saying, why is this not a disqualification if Eddie got disqualified? Oh, how come Petr Yan got disqualified but Adriano didn't get disqualified? It's just more questions for the casual fan that no one is going to be able to answer, because then they're going to be like, wait, what do you mean there's 50 different athletic commissions in the United States? What do you mean there's all these rule sets, not even just the United States, but all over the world? How come we can't do soccer kicks? Remember, I saw that guy Shogun stomping on a guy's head and Mark Hunt dropping his butt on Vanderlei. So what do you mean there are new rules? So didn't help the casual fans. The guy they put their entire promotional juice behind got just smashed by a fight that with a technique that he was arguing for. And then a guy that is clearly a whole weight class bigger than him, one, doesn't speak the best English either. If I'm one, I'm probably a little upset, but you might have a star in Adriano Moraes who could be the face of your promotion moving forward if you can get the language thing all situated and all that. But bizarre and very one championship is how I would describe the outcome of that fight.
Jed, what were your thoughts? And also the fact that Demetrius Johnson argued for the rules to be changed before the fight, and then even afterwards said, yeah, you should still change them. They should still fit. It's okay.
Steer into it, man. DJ's a king. That's the thing. Steer into it.
I love it.
DJ's a king. Live by the down knee, die by the down knee. He even said that because I wrote that up for the site this morning. Like, he said, yeah, man, I am blanking on his name. Dude, he fought in the first time he fought in one. He bolted him with the knee to the head. He was just like, yeah, I won with that. Just because I lost doesn't make it a bad or too dangerous of a technique. It's a good one. DJ's a king and should be respected as such. My opponent gave a very rambly answer that covered a lot of ground, but he did end at the right point, which is it was extremely one championship. The whole thing is just like two steps of legitimacy up from Fight Circus. It's very clown show in a lot of ways. There's a clear weight class called flyweight that the rest of the world operates under and acknowledges, but one has just decided that their flyweight will be 135 because of, I think there's something to do with the nebulous weight cutting rules that everybody thinks are good, but we actually don't really have a ton of clarity on what actually goes down there. So you end up with the greatest flyweight of all time having a flyweight fight against dude who's clearly enormous, and that's the result. Like, DJ gets bolted, and now Moraes is going to get a lot of shine. To touch on another thing, it was ridiculous that Moraes was that big of an underdog given all the stuff we just talked about. And then finally, just nobody really is talking about it. Adriano Moraes looked friggin' phenomenal last night. Like, I know that people are talking about it to some extent because he did beat DJ, but like, the thing we need to remember, this dude is primarily a grappler. He's a really high-level ground fighter, and DJ is no slouch on the feet. Like, he's talked about wanting to do some kickboxing in one. He has the big knockout of Joseph Benavidez. He's not like the world's cleanest or most effective striker, but he is very schooled there, very aware and able there. And Moraes put the wood to him, man, like dropped him with that uppercut shovel punch and then finished him with the coffin nail. Like, Moraes is going to be in a huge problem for anybody. Like, that's a bantamweight that we're not going to see in the UFC anytime soon, but that sucks because that dude could give anybody in the top five their big problems.
Yeah, let's trade for that guy. I'd be interested to see him in the UFC. So it's kind of interesting because we've seen words like we've both of you use words like unfortunate and negative and very one championship. But and Jed, like, the Alvarez loss, kind of rough because it was so controversial. And one, as Jose said, obviously has invested a lot. I mean, a lot in DJ from everything I've been told. But considering the attention the promotion has gotten since last night, and as sucky as the Alvarez thing was, would you consider last night a win for one championship? Because let's just be honest here. If DJ went in, got a 5-round decision over Adrian Moraes, and Eddie Alvarez beat Yuri last night, are we even talking about this on the show right now?
Ultimately, it's a win, but it's one of those wins where you're like, you're walking gingerly for the next couple of days afterwards. Like, you know you were in a fight, and that's kind of what they take here, because Adriano Moraes can kind of be the standard bearer for them. He's going to get a bit of a bump here, knocking out arguably the GOAT in emphatic fashion. That's going to give anybody a boost. They are getting a little bit more traction because of the peculiarities of last night. And then ultimately, they put on a good card. Like, that it was well paced. You got high name, like high name value, good, decent action. The thing that is the problem, it's not the DJ loss that's the problem. Honestly, the DJ loss, even that, like, that's probably good. That's a net good, because if the Eddie thing didn't happen, we'd still be talking the ground knee thing, because it's interesting. DJ said beforehand, hey, we should allow these, and then gets got by his own design. Like, that's an interesting angle that would be continued to talk about. The Eddie thing is what sucks, because they have invested in Eddie too. Like, they clearly want Eddie Alvarez to be something for them, and he is just not going to be that based on the outcomes of his fights. Like, and it's just never good to have a no contest or a draw in a situation like that. Like, it's just like, even a loss would have been better for them. Like, a clean loss would have been better, as opposed to a DQ. Like, that's just, it's going to leave a bad taste in everybody's mouth. It's not great. And that's your first exposure to one. You gotta claw your way out of that hole.
What do you think, Jose? Was this a win for one championship? Because even, like, as bad as the whole Eddie situation was, most people around the world are praising Eddie Alvarez. They're universally on his side. They think, in their minds, he won by first round TKO last night, even though the record book says otherwise.
I mean, they were fought on, like, in terms of the entire promotion. Yeah, it's a win. They were on TNT in the United States, so now they can start bragging that they have, what, like 100 million United US fans watching or whatever. And remember how UFC on Fox went? JDS won in like 60 seconds.
The US has actual Nielsen ratings, so they can't lie about their viewership. They got like 190. I saw it somewhere.
In a world where a certain president convinced half of our country that tomfoolery and lizards run the world, I would not be surprised if half of our country believes one championship's number. So, anyway, remember what UFC on Fox happened? JDS won 60 seconds, and everyone thought the sky was falling because, oh, Cain lost. Oh, the fight was only 60 seconds, blah, blah, blah. And then UFC on ESPN won. That fight card was meh. Like, Cynthia Calvillo and Courtney Casey was meh. And then Paul Felder and James Vick was a good fight, and then Paul Felder punctured his lung, and then Francis Ngannou ate Cain Velasquez's soul in about 60 seconds, and the entire arena just walked out. So they had an empty arena on national television for their first ESPN card, and those worked out just fine. I think what's going to be telling is how they rebound after this in terms of fight and promotion and everything, because like we said, they put so much eggs into the Eddie Alvarez and Demetrius Johnson basket. That didn't work out for them, so moving forward, how are they going to survive in the next 2-3 cards on TNT? But inevitably, it's a major win getting on cable TV in the United States, and I'm sure one championship is happy, not happy with the results of the fights, but just happy overall with the promotion.
Yep, and they'll be back next Wednesday, one on TNT 2, Christian Lee versus Timothy Nasty-Yukin for the lightweight title at 170 pounds. We'll headline that
one.
Change
that start time, though, dude. Like, you can't be doing 10 p.m. on a school night. Like, that's just not going to fly. You need to lower
it's
that.
It's only like
down,
three man. Fights, though. We got rug on the prelims.
That's three fights, and they started at 7 p.m., sir. Not 10.
Eastern Standard is the standard by which the U.S. runs, so the world runs. Mm. So you can't be doing it at 10 p.m. Like, that's capping your viewership. Like, nobody's staying up late on a Wednesday night for a sport that they don't care about or, like, nominal fans of. Like, you got to hit a 9 p.m. start window.
Sounds like you guys got to move to the left coast.
Then what do you do with the rest of these
at a reasonable time, too?
I mean, move the wrestling back. I'm unclear how that won't work. They are not maximizing their viewership potential at a 10 p.m. start time.
I don't think it would be the worst thing to put it maybe before AEW, because remember we would always complain about Bellator would lead into Cops. Now you have a built-in thing where, like, one championship can lead right into AEW. So imagine people tuning into AEW get to see the end of that DJ fight. I think that would be the better solution right there.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of tough because the fights aren't happening in the U.S. They're happening in Asia. So
it's very true.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Props to Casey Lyon. That wasn't my good point.
Eastern time zone. So, like, I don't care if they have to fight at 4 a.m. The UFC does it all the time.
That's true. But listen, all in all, all in all, interesting start to this new chapter for our friends at One Championship. But the point for round two goes to... the man with not just one six shirt, but a whole closet full of them, Jose Youngs, has tied up the ball game, 1-1.
I could have a whole closet full of six shirts, too. You'll know. You'll know my life, Mike.
You could, but you didn't tell me that. Jose told the world that, and we have to take him at his word. But listen, we've talked Bellator. We've talked ONE. Now we got to talk the UFC. They are back this Saturday on ABC, UFC Vegas 23. This one headlined by Marvin Vittori versus Kevin Holland. Holland stepping in for the injured Darren Till. We discussed this new headliner moments after we confirmed it live on the program last week. We all sort of agreed that this was fine. This is kind of the best they could do on short notice. And I like this fight. I like the heat there. It'll be interesting once they weigh in and do the face-offs, etc. But Jose, now that we're less than 48 hours away from this card going down, we had no UFC event last week. I guess, where would you rank your intrigue levels for this main event and for this card in general on a scale of 1 to 10? And why do you feel the way you feel?
On a scale of 1 to 10 for the main event, 5. Like, it is what it is. It's just, like you said, it's the best they could do. I was super, obviously, I was like 10 out of 10 intrigued by Darren Till versus Marvin Vittori. That's unfortunately not happening. And the fact that Darren Till and Marvin are still talking about each other on social media and press conferences just makes me more interested in that fight. Kevin Holland is just a fill-in right now. And yes, Kevin Holland on ABC should be exciting, especially because Marvin Vittori is not going to fight like Derek Brunson. So it should be a more exciting fight. But in terms of interest, it's like 5 out of 10, I guess. The rest of the card is awesome. I actually do like this card. Arnold Allen, Sadiq Youssef is a freaking banger. I'm 10 out of 10 excited for that. Two, I don't even consider them featherweights right now. Youssef and Allen are two of the more promising fighters at 145 from two different parts of the world. Of course, Sadiq Youssef from Nigeria, which is an area the UFC is really promoting right now. And Arnold Allen is from the UK. He seems to be the next big, bright fighter coming out of that area. And then, of course, Nina Nunes, not Nina Ansaroff, returning after giving birth to their daughter, facing Mackenzie Dern, who just spoke with you, said she has this big plan for 2021, and that starts on Saturday. And then, of course, I'm excited for my Twitter mentions to just blow up when Mike Perry steps in the octagon, because every time Mike Perry fights, the entire world has to let me know. And apparently they don't know that me and Mike Perry have squashed the beef and shook hands on it. And he apologized for being very rude to me that one time in Denver. So, yes, I'm very, very excited for this fight. Jim, I'm always down to watch Jim Miller fight, always down to watch John Modesi fight, all those cats. I actually ran into Hunter Azure not too long ago, and he was like, I'm fighting someone named Jack Shore. I don't know if you heard of him. I'm like, dude, you're going to be in for a long night if you're already kind of overlooking Jack Shore right now. So yeah, color me interested in this card all around for sure.
All right, Jed, what do you think? Where's your intrigue levels at? He's 5 for the main event, he's 10 for the rest. Where are you at?
I love Hunter Azure just not knowing about the work he's about to get. That's fantastic. Look, my thoughts on this card can be boiled down to a couple of simple things. One, I think this is actually a better main event, because like Brian Ortega and Stipe Miocic, Darren Till's bad. He has one convincing win over anybody of note, and that's Cowboy. So I don't know why he keeps falling upwards, but he found himself in another fight against like a very top-ranked middleweight that I assumed he was going to get worked in, because he doesn't win fights that matter. So this is better, because Kevin Holland has at least actually beaten a good middleweight, as opposed to just like winning a very questionable decision over one. So there's that. The rest of this card, Jose went through a lot of these fights, but most of them are really good. We were talking about this off air beforehand. This is a card that, like, it's an ABC card, and it actually feels a lot like that. Just the main event isn't bringing the sauce. Like, what this fight needs is, we need to not have three title fights on the pay-per-view. One, it's a waste of time anyway, because Usman Masvidal is going to draw. So, like, you don't need to overstack that card. That's going to do just fine business on its own. But, like, you should just pull one of those for this card. Like, put Valentina Shevchenko on ABC in, like, her best fight in years. Like, that would make this thing pop. As it stands, this is a card that is destined to underwhelm sort of the casual viewer, but is filled with really good fights. The co-main event is honestly phenomenal. Like, Sadiq Youssef and Arnold Allen – that fight is going to be great, really high level mixed martial arts. Everything else here is going on. I don't know why Jose decided he wanted to stop when you get to the heavyweight fun fest. It is Georges Danhoff, because that man is going to find a comical way to get knocked out. It's going to be awesome. But like the rest of it is whatever. The other, like the big problem, like the overarching problem with the UFC in general, but especially with this card, it's 14 friggin' fights, man. Why? We don't need 14 fights. You could cut four off this card and nobody would be sad about it other than those fighters in the fights and their immediate family. We gotta stop doing this. I would love to have free time. Like, as a person who covers it, I have to. But as a fan, like, you should just want them to not do this shit. This is way too many fights for a card that isn't that good, that, or at least isn't going to bring that many eyeballs. Just cut it down. Let's keep it moving. Because, like, that was one of the best parts about one. It was quick. We got in, we got out. Everything was fantastic. I would love that to be happening here. Instead, we have 8 hours of fighting. Only like four of it do we actually care about.
All right. Well, I mean, you mentioned some fights. You mentioned the heavyweight fight, which is always fun. Is that is the DeCastro Danhoff fight? Is that your deep cut, or are we looking somewhere else that could steal the show?
I mean, that's probably a deep cut just because, like, nobody's talking about Jorgen DeCastro versus Georges Danhoff for a good reason, mind you. I don't want to pretend like you should be talking about this fight. I'm the guy wearing a Fight Circus t-shirt. Of course, that's the kind of stuff that I'm going to get my jollies up with. But, like, the fight I am low-key the most looking forward to, you know where I'm going with it, baby. It's middleweight. And we're going to have the middlingest middleweight fight that's been since the last time I talked about a middleweight fight on this show. On the main card, Sam Alvey, who is just a very interesting character inside and outside of the cage. He's taking Julian Marquez on. Marquez maybe has the worst fight IQ of anybody I've ever seen, like ever in fighting. And this fight is going to look like Sam Alvey not doing anything for a really long time and somehow still winning this fight for like 13 minutes. And then Julian Marquez is going to knock him out somehow with like two to go. It's going to be awesome and comically terrible in the best way possible. That is easily the thing I'm most looking forward to from a ridiculous standpoint.
All right, Jose, what's your deep cut fighter or storyline that could steal the show on Saturday afternoon in beautiful Las Vegas? Oh, actually, Saturday morning in Las Vegas, super early, 8:30 a.m. start time over there.
Yeah, well, the Mike Perry-Daniel Rodriguez fight, regardless of what people think my feelings are on Mike Perry, that fight absolutely rules, but that's not really a deep cut. The first fight of the night, Imba Kasangane versus Sasha. Not even going to try to pronounce his last name. Imba Kasangane, of course, was on the receiving end of that very violent head kick knockout by Joaquin Buckley, the one that everyone saw Kanye West even remix. So anytime you can tie Kanye West into the sport of anything, people are going to be talking about it. So this is his first fight back. And I run MMA Fighting's Instagram page, and Sasha comments on almost everything we post, and it's usually arguing against the fighters. So if like a fighter is saying like, I want more money, Sasha's like, well, then don't sign the contract. It seems it's very not what you would expect a fighter to say. So I'm very much looking forward to watching him fight, just because I felt like I've interacted with this man so much, and none of it has been through Jose Young's. It's been all through MMA Fighting's Instagram page. So I'm very much looking forward to that. And then my opponent brought up Sam Alvey, who just fought to a draw on Fight Island. The guy he fought to a draw is fighting so much further down the card. He was like, he's what? Dang Lun Jung was what, 15-2 when he fought Sam Alvey, something like that? Had like 12, 13 fights, wins in a row with a bunch of couple knockouts in the UFC. Fight Sam Alvey to your draw, because Sam Alvey is the most bizarre fighter in like the middleweight. And he's going to, what's that, a middleweight, light heavyweight, regardless, whatever it is. It's weird. It's weird. It's a real weird situation. William Knight, of course, is an interesting cat too. Just a weird couple fights to kick off the main card, and I am very much looking forward to it. The prelims, I mean.
Sasha Palatnikov.
Yes. He's always commenting on our Instagram pages, and it's always something I would not expect a fighter to say. Like, he was arguing against John Jones or something like that. I'm like, this is – I don't understand.
You should expect like, fighters to say that. John Jones should be argued against on principle.
Fair. He also gets in – like, anyone that gets in arguments on Instagram comments is just a – another level of human that I don't relate to whatsoever. And he does it so much on our page that I just have to see him fight now.
There you go. That fight 107 in Pakazang, and I drop into 170 for that one. So 11:30 Eastern. We'll see what happens. That means our pre-fight show is going down at 11 a.m. Eastern time. So get your coffee ready. Nice bright and early on Saturday. Preview show tomorrow, of course. We'll have you covered for that card. But point for round three goes to there's just no way I can go against Jed on that answer for his deep cut. It was just so good.
I mean, that fight's just going to be ridiculous. Like, the most bizarre fighter versus the dude with the worst fight IQ. There's no way the outcome isn't hilarious.
Well, listen, now he's got that. Marquez now has that James Krause cheat code. So he's already got one fight down. Let's see what he can do
and
with the rest.
I didn't even mention the fact that Marquez is going to win, and he's probably going to have some real weird Miley Cyrus follow-up shit to come in. Like, that fight is going to be bananas.
Yes, it will. Yes, it will.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Koreshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
So speaking of bananas, we head to the final round of regulation, and the UFC and Venom era has officially begun. We got the new kits. We saw the new gear revealed on Tuesday to everybody. The pay structure was also revealed since we last spoke, I believe. And the gear has been met with mixed reactions. Some love it. Others think it's just okay. And others think it's basically Reebok with fangs on it. So Jed Meshew, what do you think, my friend? If you were a UFC fighter, would you be happy with the new Venom apparel? Would you be happy with the new deal? What are your thoughts on this whole thing now that you've seen it with your eyes?
No, I wouldn't be happy with it. It's Reebok with fangs, which means it's an improvement, because as dumb as Venom is with its name, that's terrible. Their logo is at least like cooler than Reebok's logo, even if it is far less well known. So maybe there's a give and take there. But like, this, the gear looks the same. We shouldn't be surprised. The UFC has no creative apparatus behind it, frankly. Look what they did with the friggin' BMF belt. Like, the one time they stole a good idea from one of their fighters, they then immediately put forth the most generic trash ass title they could muster. Like, of course they're not gonna build a better fight kit that's more interesting. They're gonna just palette swap that shit and throw some fangs on it. Like, it's what we should expect. It sucks. You should never be excited about it. Like, honestly, one of the things that's the most fun about watching ONE or friggin' Bellator is the, like, different uniforms, because there's at least some level of personality to them. So the gear sucks. The pay structure, I think we did talk about it at the end last week. The pay structure is arguably worse. I know that monetary, like from a straight number standpoint, it's better. But if you factor in inflation, it's actually not even as good over the period of time. So they should hate that, and they should really hate that they have had no say in any of this. Like, they didn't get to bargain for this. They don't get to do anything cool with their fight shorts. Hell, Bryce Mitchell posted about it. Like, he had to go through hell and high water to get himself some camo Reebok gear, and then they ditched Reebok, and he's gonna have to do that whole damn thing again to get Reebok shorts from Venom. Like, it's just, it sucks. It's the one of the worst parts about the UFC. They're creatively bankrupt in the most obvious, visible ways. And so no fighter should be pumped about it, because nobody should be excited about it. It is what it is.
All right, Jose. I knew Casey was going to play that sound effect. No doubt about it. Jose is just like, just waiting for his chance to respond to the Venom gear. What are your thoughts?
It's unbelievable how little I care about how the Venom fight kits look. I just don't care. Like, pay the people more. I don't care if you give them like burlap sacks and it's all just a different shade of beige. I just don't care what they look like. Just pay the fighters more. And yes, everyone can complain that they don't get to be creative. But I've heard I'm sure there are fighters, and it's just not on my radar. Everyone that's complaining about it is the people that are like, oh, I just want to go buy my favorite fighter's t-shirt, and then I can't wear it now. Go buy it directly from them. Robert Whittaker's selling shirts for like $80. Go drop $80 on a Robert Whittaker shirt if you want it from his store, and he gets all of the money, and the UFC gets none of it. Yes, it's unfortunate that they can't wear what they want to wear inside the UFC octagon, because we all want to see cool and awesome entrances. We all want to see all of that. But it's just, I do not care. It's unbelievable how little I care what these fight kits look. Are they functional? I hope so. Because remember when the Reebok fight kits came out? I think it was Valerie, what's her name?
Yeah, the women's were trash.
Yeah, like her top kept coming up. And then like Uriah Faber's shorts kept falling down against Dominic Cruz. And people said it was, and they were spelling everything wrong. I don't care what they look like, as long as a few things. They fit, they work, and they're not falling down, and you pay the fighters more. If you want to make all of them wear either pink or mauve, so be it. I do not care. If you want to let them wear cool Akatsuki outfits all the time, cool. I know Michael Venom Page did it. I know Roxy's done it in Invicta. I know Angela Hill's done it with her cool weigh-ins. And yes, it adds character, but we are seeing so few new characters in the UFC that I don't even think fighters will take advantage of it. Everyone's like, oh, I want to see him wear this and that. I am willing to bet that very few fighters will take advantage of the fact that they will have less handcuffs on them for their creativity, and they'll probably just put a bunch of other stickers and look like a NASCAR racer again, which is fine as long as they're making more money. That's all I care about. Aesthetics are so low on the totem pole in my mind. Just give them more money.
Okay, so there are a few times in a
where's
host's
my applause
career.
Or boo? Where's my applause or boo? I know you want to boo me, Casey. Give me the boo. Give me that wah, wah. There you go. There you go. Don't be afraid to give me that noise.
I would like to rebuttal against Jose just very quickly. I hope they misspell names, because one of the great regrets I have in my life is that I didn't buy a Gibbler shirt. I don't give a shit about the UFC jersey thing, but I would absolutely love to own a Gibbler shirt, because that is a great piece of random ass MMA arcana. Like, that would be awesome.
All right, so there are a few times in a host career where they take what I like to call like calculated risks. Like, do I ask this question? And this is one of those questions where I weighed the pros and cons, and I was like, how is this going to go? And we got two terrific answers. But the real reason, like, I was hoping that Jose's response would go the way that it did is because I wanted to get your take on something else. Because right before we hit record, I just listened to something on Twitter, because everyone's talking about the promotional pay with the Venom deal, and Jose talked about the fighter pay, and that's great. I think everybody's with that. But Joe Lozon was on Sirius XM the other day, and he was asked about the deal. It was on Tuesday, as a matter of fact. And he said essentially, and I may be paraphrasing a little bit, with this Reebok deal, there's like a reason that Nike wasn't selected, that Under Armour wasn't selected. Reebok offered the UFC more money. And, you know, basically said, like, you know, we had someone that was willing to give us more money than anybody else. And when the stuff got released and we saw the pay, we weren't happy with it. So we ran their name we flushed their name down the toilet. So we basically got what we deserved, because after the way we treated Reebok and reacted to the Reebok deal initially, it kind of crushed us for the future. Cause like, who would be excited to like get on board with the fighters if the fighters just get a dump on everything? So I'm curious, Jose, like, what do you think of Joe Lozon's view on all this from like a fighter's perspective? That, yeah, sure, the fighters should make more money, but he's basically saying like, it's our fault we're not, because we shit on the deal to begin with the first time.
I 100% get it. Cause I remember I was working for another site, and one of the things I had to write about was I had to go through the comments on Reebok's Facebook page, like the week of the deal came out and the pay structure and everything came out. I remember Brandon Schaub came out and retired because he wasn't going to make as much money with the Reebok deal. They could post anything they wanted. They could post like, we're hosting. I think someone was like, oh, we're hosting the CrossFit Games. And all of the comments were about the UFC deal. Nothing about the actual thing they're promoting. So I completely get where Joe Lozon is coming from, because he's right. Not only the fighters, but the fans were just trashing on it so much that Reebok probably got scared. Nike got scared, and everyone got scared. And the UFC's like, oh, Venom, come on down. You're the only one left. You're the only one willing to do business with us. Doesn't surprise me whatsoever. And Joe Lozon is a very bright man. He's the former co-host of the A-Side, fellow Bostonian. I agree.
Jed, your thoughts on a fighter's perspective on this?
Joe Lozon's never been more wrong about anything in his entire life. One, I'm pretty sure Lozon said this when the Reebok deal came out. So there were definitely a couple of fighters saying, like, we need to not badmouth this because of the future thing. Like, he's right about one thing. It is entirely the fighter's fault. It is not the fighter's fault because they shit on a shitty product that pays them shitty money that they had no say in. It's their fault because they had no say in it. Like, if they had unionized, if they had gathered in any meaningful way, then yeah, they would get to dictate these terms or at least be involved in them. Like, the way to fix this thing has always been fighters get a piece of space on the uniform where they can promote their own thing. But they can't even negotiate that because they're not even at the table. They're not in the building. They're not in the area code of being at the table. So yeah, he's right. It's their fault in that. But the rest of this is nonsense. Like, do you really think that Venom was the only option? No, the UFC was negotiating with several people. Venom offered the most because they had the most to gain from this. Nike doesn't need the UFC for shit. So they're not going to offer them all the money in the world for this. Like, there's just no need. Like, the fighters are getting a raw deal here. Yes, it is their fault they're getting a raw deal here, but they should not beg and scrape for something better. Like, if they had just been nice, do you really think Nike's going to come in with a godfather offer that's going to pay him more money? No. Nike's in business and the UFC's in business. Nike might come in with a godfather offer that pays the UFC more money, but they're not going to see a damn cent of that. Like, this is the most charitable view of the UFC's business negotiations I've ever heard of. Like, yeah, the fighters screwed this up, and not they're the victims of what is clearly terrible management negotiation aimed at exploiting them, the workers. Like, no, this is terrible. This is awful. He's all the way wrong.
There you go. Some different views. And hey, guess what? We get to see Impa Kasang and I and Sasha Palatnikov kick off the new era on Saturday, UFC Vegas 23. So there you go. A fascinating round four. A question I didn't really want to ask, but I'm glad I did, because we got some great responses. And now I don't even know what's happening right now, but the point for round four goes to, because the Red Sox won, Jose gets the point. Can't crap on Joe Lozon on this program. I don't know. This is the toughest choice of my career. But listen, we're going to head to the knock around because I'm selfish. And you know how the show goes. Listen, you know, you can see it on my face. But listen, one question decides it all. There's not going to be any doors this time, Jose. It's just going to be a straight question. There are some options to choose from. But once this question is asked, Each of these gentlemen will have 1 minute to respond. Once that is done, we'll turn it over to the Honorable Judge Casey Lydon. He will render the final decision, and hopefully he can go to sleep with this decision feeling good about it. But there's lots of ways we could have gone with this. Everyone has talked about Poirier McGregor 3. We've known for months this fight was happening. We're going to talk all about that, I'm sure. We talked Ngannou Jones, the Derek Lewis, that whole triangle last week. We're certainly going to be talking about it again, no doubt about it. But I wanted to pump the brakes on that for a week or so because I have a feeling this story ain't going anywhere. But anyways, Jose, you are the champion. You have the choice. Do you want to go first or pass it over to Jed?
Second.
It's going number two. All right. We have one category, Jed Meshew. There's only one door. That door is upcoming UFC Fight Night main events. All right. So after this Saturday, Mr. Meshew, next week we got Robert Whittaker versus Kelvin Gastelum. Then we get 261. That's out of the equation for now. May 1st, Dominic Reyes versus Jiří Procházka in the main event. Week after that, we get Corey Sandhagen versus TJ Dillashaw. After that, we get the pay-per-view. And then we round out May's fight nights with Rob Font versus Cody Garbrandt. And look, it seems obvious what the correct answer to this question is, but let's have some fun, Jed. Which one of these upcoming fight night main events that I just listed interests you the most and why? And I also want to throw out a little caveat that whatever fight you choose, Jose has to pick a different fight. So this could slightly be in your favor to your advantage, Jed. So 1 minute on the clock. You heard the main events, the upcoming fight nights through May. Your time starts right now.
So I don't know that there's an obvious answer because all these fight night main events are actually really fun fights. I'm going to take what I think you're referencing when you say is the obvious answer, just because it is actually the most fascinating for me. And that's Corey Sandhagen, TJ Dillashaw. I mean, look, Dillashaw has not lost at bantamweight. Like, he did not lose his title at this weight class. He lost it when he cut a bunch of weight and then vacated his belt because he got popped for EPO. And conversely, Sandhagen has looked like a monster his last couple of times out. Like, rebounded from the Aljo loss really well. Maybe is right there in contention. I think he's a fascinating style matchup for anybody. And I still think Dillashaw might have the juice to go with anybody in the world. Like, Dillashaw, Peter Yan, that fight is bananas. I can't wait to see it. We will get it at some point. But first, we're going to get this one. This is going to be super high volume, super technical. It's going to go everywhere. And the storylines coming into it are, I think, more captivating than any of the other fight nights. I'm going with that one.
All right. So we go over to the champion. This is why you're the champion, Jose. This is, you get put in these situations here. We got Whittaker Gastelum. We got Reyes Procházka. We take Dillashaw Sandhagen off the table. And we got Font and Garbrandt. So what is the most fascinating fight? What horse you jumping on? What fight excites you the most? Your 1 minute starts right now, sir.
In terms of fascination, I wasn't going to pick TJ Dillashaw, Corey Sandhagen anyway. I am so on board for Jiří Procházka doing anything. I loved him in Rizin. I thought his fight against Volkan Ozdemir was absolutely ridiculous when he was fighting Volkan Ozdemir with his hands down and still decapitated a human man on Fight Island. They were supposed to fight earlier. That didn't happen. It gets pushed. I'm glad it's still a five-round main event because especially with the light heavyweight division kind of being more open than it's been in like a decade, we get these all awesome fun matchups. Yes, Jan is the champion. He just beat Israel Adesanya. He's probably going to fight Golovkin after that. And then Alexander Radzic is there too. There are fights to make at light heavyweight, and I am so on board with Jiří Procházka versus anybody against a door, against Jan, against Radzic, against, have him fight Israel Adesanya, have him go up and fight John Jones. I don't care who he fights. I just want to see him do crazy, wild, ridiculous things and knock people dead on television.
Wow. You know what was so great about that answer, Jose, is I could close my eyes and just hear you pounding that table, and I knew where your hands are going to be the whole time. I mean, that was pure passion right there. And, of course, Jed brings nothing but passion to this program, and this is why this is such a great matchup. This was the most fascinating matchup. This is more fascinating than anything else we've talked about today. But now the fascination peaks even higher because we turn it on over to the now, I'm sure, very certain, Honorable Judge E. Casey Lydon, the judge, the jury, the executive producer, to render the final decision. Casey, do you have a decision in mind? Who is the champ?
All right. your winner. And new Jed Meshew.
He gets it done. What a battle.
This shirt is undefeated, by the way. 2-0. That's what this shirt is.
Oh, man. That was a hellacious battle. Really enjoyed that one.
Ew. I think I'm going to the bump just because it's Fight Circus tomorrow, and I'm okay with that. Yeah. I'm okay with that bump. You know, I stood my ground. I've dug my flag into my corner. I deserve to reap the benefits.
Mr. Jose Youngs did make an incredible argument for Yuri. I love
that was
Yuri.
That's obviously the other good choice.
Yeah,
Mike,
that was.
Which one did you think was the obvious one?
The one you said.
Yeah, I kind of thought that was the case. I really debated going curveball with Rob Funk, Cody Garbisi, just because it's funny, but decided I'd try to not.
There you go. Well, with that, Jed, you get 30 seconds to talk about whatever it is you want to talk about, good, bad, indifferent. I wonder what you're going to talk about, but you can talk about whatever you want, my friend. Go ahead.
Look, I'm not going to directly talk about Fight Circus just because we did this last week. It's tomorrow, I think, at midnight. You should watch it. Not on a work computer, because you should not watch on that, but you should definitely watch it. It's going to be hella fun. I would like to take this opportunity to call out one man. I am the Fight Circus guy. I've been repping it since day one harder than anyone. A lot of people joining the bandwagon. Sean Alshady used to work with me. He's really starting to try and encroach my ground. I'm not okay with that, Sean. I'm the Fight Circus dude. Back the hell off or come get this work.
So whoever is on social media duty, clip that piece, tag Alshady. And by the way, I have spoken with Mr. Alshady. We will see him at some point later this month. So your call may not be wasteful at all.
I'll still be
Mr. Meshew.
Don't worry.
And Jose, what would you like to say? You still have your 6 shirts to comfort you in this sad moment. What would you like to say to
the
people?
Oh, I'm not sad whatsoever. I mean, I thought I was going to be facing Sarah Coffin, so I was expecting something else. Obviously, she couldn't happen. And I already pieced up Jed last week, so it's like, you know, when those fighters, like, you know, I didn't really have any motivation, I didn't train, I didn't do any of that. That's normally how I interact with Jed anyway. It's like, why do I have to do this right now? It could be anything. I'm like, God damn it, I just don't want to deal with Jed today. But the fact that I have to face him 2 weeks in a row, just mentally and emotionally wasn't there, because I had already achieved his goals and dreams last week, and I thought I was going to achieve more of them this week by taking on Sarah Kaufman. Didn't happen, so he's still a little dead inside because he's still missing that one piece between me and Sarah Kaufman going back and forth once again. Maybe I'll fulfill his wishes if he's nice, but that's neither here nor there. He'll probably be nice the day he uses conditioner, which is going to be never, as he has that mop of whatever he calls hair on the top of his dome. So it is what it is. We all complained about does Stipe Miocic deserve the rematch between France and Ngannou? And I said probably, and Jed said doesn't interest me, and then I was a good man and gave him the rematch. So naturally Stipe now has to rematch France and Ngannou just based off of that logic. His Fight Circus 3 shirt is technically undefeated, but he's also undefeated on April 8th, 2021. So for the rest of those dates, he's undefeated too. Don't know why that his shirt would make a difference. So let's please move on. And I can finally, after what, 4 or 5 weeks in a row of carrying the ratings, I can take a break and Jed can flounder and he can be the ultimate warrior and I'll be Hogan who has to come in and bump the ratings up and give him a little Hogan dust, brother, and then move on from there.
Can I rescore that last round? Because I don't know, man. Round six looks really impressive. Good showing from Jose.
Yeah. Where was that, Jose? You just brought the heat after the fact.
Anytime I can talk about the old 90s and the territories of professional wrestling, you will lose. So that's what happened right there.
You gotta lean on that a little earlier, my guy.
Jose basically was the Shawn Michaels, and he took Jed Meshew Jannetty and threw him right through the barbershop window with that promo. Nicely done. Nicely done. But that's it.
Shout out to Bruce the Barber. Terrible wrestler. Got his face destroyed. Still alive, though.
Yes. Sure did. But listen, we're done. We're getting out of here. We'll see you next week. Get excited. The reign of Jed Meshew has begun once again. So for Jed Meshew, Jose Youngs, Casey Lydon.
and Mike.
The iconic voice of Esther Lynn gets you out of here. Good night, everybody.
This has been Between the Links, an MMA fighting production on the Vox Media Network.
I'm Esther Lynn.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with a bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.